Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
And welcome to episode 777 of Gamertag Radio. I'm Paris, and I'm here with Pete.
Good morning.
If you're watching us live on Twitch, you can see there is no Danny this week. Danny is currently traveling, so safe travels to Danny. But before we get into the show proper, Pete, I wanted to bring up SuperCon. Because okay. Danny and yourself were there yesterday. And you screened, almost called it The Messengers, but you screened our documentary, the Gamertag Radio podcast story. Yeah. So kind of tell me about that. How did that go?
So I don't know. That's more of a Danny question because unfortunately I was stuck in the worst line of traffic I've experienced in like a long time. Like I literally got to Fort Lauderdale. I was within a mile of the venue and I didn't get into the venue for another hour and a half because of the traffic was so bad. Danny was there though on time, thankfully. Actually, he had my daughter with him because he was in Kendall, obviously, with my daughter visiting her grandparents and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to get to the actual screening itself. There is another one this afternoon though. I think it's at 3 p.m. On the third floor. So they'll be doing another screening today, and then they'll be doing the award ceremony later this afternoon. But aside from that, I think it was I had a great time, more so because my daughter had a phenomenal time. She got to meet she's not there for the comics. She's there for the meet and greets. She got to meet Josh Keaton, a.k.a. Shiro from Voltron, who she fangirled out like hard. It was crazy.
I would too.
It was that's pretty much how she was, right? She waved and got a wave back from Bex, who plays Pidge on Voltron. So that was really cool. She spent there was nobody and I'm gonna screw up her name now. God, Shelly Sink. She plays Max in Stranger Things from season 2.
Is that the redhead?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sheila Sinks, I think, Shelly Sink, I think is what her name is. Anyways, there was nobody in her line. And like, you know, my daughter wanted to meet her. So she just came up. They literally like a 15-minute chat, just them talking. And, my daughter's just like fidgeting and like red just cause like she's meeting people, you know, like actors stuff like that from Hollywood. And then while that's going on, I think his name is Hungry Bear on Twitter. Happened to be at SuperCon with his friend who he had introduced to the GTR podcast, like on the way to SuperCon. And he was like, oh my God, Godfrey, Pete Rock. Oh, so it was like really, really cool getting a chance to meet people from the Discord community or from the Gamertag Radio community in general. Just having a chance to meet listeners in person and come up and say hello. So we had a good discussion for like 10, 15 minutes. We were talking about Cyberpunk and how they were so excited about the game as a result of our roundtable discussion from E3. And then we talked about it and he tweeted about it on Twitter. And then like late last night, Cyberpunk, the actual account liked, and I think they retweeted the tweet. So that was really, really cool. And then later on, another person from the Discord community, Punisher305, he was there. He's in this massive Bane costume, the original Bane costume with, you know, the green cords coming out of his back. So shout out to him and everybody else that was with him. They actually took video of my daughter talking to Lucy Pohl, who plays Mercy in Overwatch. So like at that point, I wasn't even there for the comic books. I had brought mine, like in the event I was going to do like some trading or something like that, which I almost bought an old Batman book. But I ended up at that point just going to SuperCon for my daughter and making sure that she had an amazing time, which she did. She was so happy. So at that point, if you ask me in that regard, SuperCon was a success because of the venue selection and the location. I think that might be my last SuperCon, unless something else happens. Really? Yeah, unless something else comes along. But yeah, that just might be my last SuperCon trip because the traffic, and maybe if they just do another selection, you know, another venue selection, it might make things better. But right now, it was a struggle to get in. Or maybe it was just because I wanted to get there early at 10 o'clock and, you know, I had to deal with traffic of everybody else trying to get there early. But my daughter's happy, so I'm happy.
That's good. That's good. Now, before we go further, because I do have a bone to pick about one thing, I want to remind everyone, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us over at Audio Boom. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, all the ColecoVision, the Ventrex system, everywhere. You can find us everywhere. We're everywhere. And if you want to leave us feedback, Danny, go ahead and play that right now.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right. Speaking of Danny, because I did see the tweet where you met up with Hungry Bear, and that was really awesome. It sounds like SuperCon overall. That was an awesome time. I did see the picture, and Danny was wearing a Black Ops 4 t-shirt. And of course, I had to comment on the 4 stuff. But it brings me to something else with Danny, with the conversation you guys had last week, since I was not on, and him patting himself on the back for like 35 minutes about how he was right about the whole blackout thing and them not showing it at E3 and blah, blah, blah. And then obviously we got the press release from Activision earlier this week that we're going to have the Black Ops 4 multiplayer beta in early August. And then at some point in September, we're also going to have a beta for the blackout mode, which obviously is their version of Battle Royale. So, you know, I was joking with Danny offline about, you're still not right. They didn't say it was coming to the Gamescom and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we had a good laugh about it. But logically, that should be where Activision and Treyarch actually does reveal what Blackout's going to be. And then they'll say, all right, here's the beta. It's sometime in September and do it that way, which that would be the most logical thing. But knowing Activision, I'm not 100% sure that's going to happen. It wouldn't surprise me if they do a separate event for blackout mode in early September, invite the media out, streamers, whoever, let them play it. And then like literally days after that, boom, now the beta is available and everybody can jump in and play it. So I'm just curious when that came out, your thoughts on it. What do you think?
I'm kind of excited simply because I'm such a fan of the BR genre that I'm hoping that they'll finally give us more information. Part of me is still concerned that it's not going to be enough to change the genre. And the reason I'm saying change the genre, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and all of these well-established first-person shooter games have technically been the same for the past 8, 9, 10 years. There's been no fundamental change in the way the game plays. And I don't know if this Battle Royale flavor of Call of Duty, aside from the fact that you might get some vehicles or, you know, it might be, you know, set in a much larger style of Nuketown. I don't know if functionally they're going to be able to, what are they going to be able to add to it that's going to set it apart from the already established Fortnite and PUBG and now Islands of Nine, which we'll talk about shortly. What is it that, you know, because again, they've technically been the same game for the past 8 or 10 years. What are they going to be able to add to it that's going to make it so dynamic and so game-changing that it's going to force people to stop playing the other established titles? And that's my main concern. Aside from that, I mean, and we've talked about Call of Duty. I think it was Michael Pachter that said it on the show a couple of months ago that Call of Duty is basically review proof. Regardless of what it's going to do, it's still going to sell like gangbusters and it's not going to make a difference what it does. Those titles, they run on whether it's their single player, which hopefully they bring it back in this iteration. I still don't. I think they said that they're not doing a single player. They're just focusing on multiplayer now. But their multiplayer is almost bulletproof. They work as intended. What is it that they're going to change to fit this battle royale scheme, and will it force people to stop playing the other titles that made them so popular?
Well, I mean, that's the million-dollar question, not only for Call of Duty, but also for DICE with Battlefield 5. What the hell are you going to bring to the market that's going to get people off of Fortnite or PUBG? Personally, I don't see this being a smashing success for either one. I would actually lean more towards Battlefield having more success than what Call of Duty is going to do. But we simply don't know until they unveil what the map size is going to look like, what the player count is going to look like, how they're integrating vehicles into it, what is the weapon selection going to look like, etc. I think it's very apparent right now who the king of this genre is. It's Fortnite, without a question. No one's arguing that at this point. I do worry about oversaturation, and we're already seeing it. There was a game that launched this week to zero people. I forget the name of it right now, but I was watching a video on it earlier in the week. But it's just the point. You know, obviously, Cliffy B tried to salvage his studio by rushing out a Battle Royale mode that didn't have the success that it needed, and the studio got shuttered. I worry more that this version of Battle Royale for Call of Duty is just a result of them not being able to get the single player done in time. So this was the pivot. What can we hurry up and get done in 6 to 9 months so that we can have a new mode out? Obviously, Battlefield sees that their competitors doing this. They see the success that the genre is having, so they're obviously going to try it as well. We know no information about either one. I will try it 100%. I mean, when that beta comes out, I am looking forward to it because it's a big curiosity factor. I just want to know, what the hell is it going to be? I've found that I'm not big into Battle Royale because as much fun as I've had when I have played Fortnite and PUBG, I don't go back and play them. So maybe the genre is just not for me. I don't know. It's not something that I wake up and look forward to running back into, you know, day after day, week after week. Maybe it's just not my cup of tea, but like I said, we'll see. What Call of Duty.
I want to touch on that real quick. Why? Yeah. What is it about that? Like, because I know you like the multiplayer.
None of your damn business is
no,
what it is.
I'm curious. Answer the damn question. What is it about it? Because I know you like the component. I know you love the competitive multiplayer component discussion, but what is it about the BR genre that just doesn't grab you? Like, is it because it's a one and done?
Yeah, honestly, I honestly cannot answer that question. Why is my camera out of focus now? That's weird. I can't answer the question. I don't know, because I watch Trey play Fortnite all the time and he's actually getting really good at it. Maybe I just need that consistent crew that just pushes me into playing, and then I'll start playing more, and then I'll get hooked on it and I'll play it all the time. I mean, I've done Fortnite with Danny a couple times. I've done it with Trey a few times. Obviously, I've done PUBG, you know, with yourself and a few other people a few times, but I never get up the next day and go, man, I really want to go play some PUBG and go run and play it. And it's not that I dislike it, that I dislike the mechanics in it and the genre of it and all that. I don't know. I honestly can't answer that question. I just find myself going towards other games instead of those type of games. Maybe because they're super popular right now and I don't want to just jump on the wagon of what's super popular. I don't know. I honestly can't answer the question.
Okay. Fair assessment. Fair assessments. Fair reasoning. We did mention, or I mentioned, Islands of Nine in there. And I think it's a great opportunity to segue into that. Islands of Nine launched just a couple of days ago. I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, dropped onto early access on Steam. And it's another battle royale. It's another entry into the battle royale category. It's created by Define Human Studios, which is actually a studio located here in South Florida. They were on Kickstarter for about a year and a half now. They finally hit their goal. They launched, and I'm going to tell you, I haven't played PUBG since it came out. I haven't had a desire to play PUBG since it came out. It does everything right that we've been wanting out of PUBG for a title that just came out. And it doesn't have the numbers that PUBG or Fortnite has, but it's doing It's the little things that it does. It tells you how far away people are. It tells you how far away, you know, your objectives are. Your games are quick. You're in and out in 10 to 15 minutes from beginning to end. Like we played, I played for 5 hours last night. Like after spending a whole day in Comic-Con, you know, driving from Miami to West Palm Beach and doing things in between, I came on, I think it was like at 9 o'clock, and I didn't go to bed until 2 a.m. Right. And it, I didn't even realize until I ended the stream that it was like, oh, it's, I've been on for almost 5 hours. That's amazing. Right. I played it Friday afternoon and Friday evening as well with friends. It's a game that you're quick. And here's a great thing. Typically when you go into the lobby, and we'll take PUBG or even Fortnite, for example, when you go into the lobby and you're waiting for people to load in, you're just running around, you know, you're not doing anything other than like, you know, running around. I know in Fortnite, you're jumping around and shooting and, you know, you're breaking things down for mats, which I don't even know if they actually, those mats, you can use them when you go, when you actually fly off the bus. And in PUBG, you're just running around. In Islands of Nine, you're playing gun game. There's no progression towards it, but it gets you warmed up and into the feel of the game while the game is loading, while you're waiting for people to load into the server, you know, and it's, you know, you get 2 kills, you swap guns. You get 2 more kills, you get another gun. You get 2 more kills, you get another gun. And there's 2 different arenas. Actually, there's 3 arenas. The main arena, which is a series of corridors and rooms, you can go around playing gun game. There's the outside part of the gun game where you go outside, there's no gravity. So you're jumping and you're just like literally floating in air in an outside arena playing gun game. And then there's a 3rd arena on the inside, which is a jumping puzzle. So there's just, it's so much fun being able to do multiple things before you actually get into the game. And then once you get into the game, that's when the battle royale experience happens and you're falling. You get to pull up your HUD, you figure out where you're going to go. And then at that point is when the game timer starts. And I think we won 3 games last night. I played with our Discord community members, Duffy and Beaker. We won 3 games, but it felt like we played 25, 30 games in a 2-hour period. Whereas in PUBG, if you get to the end of the game, that's a 30 to 45 minute experience. So, right. And if you die as soon as you drop, you're sitting there bored for the next 30, 40 minutes while your friends are playing, unless they die rapidly too. So the fact that you're getting in these 10 and 15 minute moments, granted, 50 player max right now. So, and I don't know if they're going to be making plans to expand that for this, for squads and stuff, but single player, duos and squads are all 50 player max, smaller map, but you're getting really into the excitement of the gameplay right off the bat. And that's part of the reason why the Sanak map is so popular on PUBG and why, for me, this game is so much more popular. And it gives you the feel of Call of Duty slash CSGO because it's a quick Twitch response type shooter. And it's just fun. And they're doing a lot of things correctly. And so shout out to Define Human Studios. I will be playing it more. I'll be playing it tonight on my Sunday night stream. So if you guys want to stop by and check it out, feel free to come by, check out, and see what Islands of Nine is all about. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, that sounds very interesting. I like that it's quicker. It's a quick pace, quote unquote, battle royale. Like for the point that you made against something like PUBG, where hey, you die right away, then you're just sitting there for 30 minutes. You know, waiting for your teammates to die so you can jump back in. So it keeps it going, keeps momentum going. It makes it more of a traditional PvP experience than we've seen with the Battle Royale mode. So yeah, I'll definitely have to check it out. I know you've been talking about it during the week since you picked it up. But moving on from that, because I'm sure eyes have rolled in the back of their head so hard they're about to pop out with the Battle Royale stuff. So let's go to something else that'll make your eyes roll, and that's Guardian Con. That happened this weekend, and Guardian Con, for people that don't know, it is a Bungie / Destiny themed convention. It's where all the Destiny community gets together in Tampa, Florida. Is this the fourth year?
Third or fourth year.
It's the third or fourth year that they've done Guardian Con, and this is probably the third or fourth year I've been yelled at for not going. And then I sit back on social media and I see all the pictures and I get sad because I'm like, why didn't I go? But unfortunately, just with job change and just I'd already went on a family vacation a week before, I just simply didn't have the time to be able to go. But I need to try and make it a priority for next year, probably take Trey with me. Again, it's Tampa, it's home. So it's like an easy thing for me to be able to do. So I need to just do it. Again, just rousing success for what Guardian Con is, because it's not just an excuse for a bunch of Destiny community people to get together. They're also working towards a great cause. They do a bunch of charity streams during the week and, you know, a lot of different charity events, giveaways, things during the actual event itself. And it all goes towards St. Jude's. And they've raised over $2.7 million this year for St. Jude's, which is amazing. It's amazing and it's scary at the same time, because that $2.7 million barely runs St. Jude's for 2 days, not even 2 days, about a day and a half, because I believe it takes about $1.5 million per day to run St. Jude's. And St. Jude's is children's hospital. It's, you know, obviously taking care of kids is a great cause. But I love this personally. I don't care if you love or hate the game. Game obviously doesn't matter in what I'm talking about right now. I love that a bunch of people that rallied around a video game and created a community went on to do a greater cause, you know, for something. And you're seeing it grow every year that they do this. More and more money is being donated towards a great cause. And this is a great thing. This is the good side of gaming. This is the time that we can talk about gaming and we can have a smile on our face and not cringe because someone's done something silly, or, you know, like obviously the whole Guild Wars 2 ArenaNet thing. I'm not going to get into it here because I think it's been talked about enough on other various outlets, whether either side that you're on, that's your personal opinion. I will keep my opinion to myself on this one. But going back to Guardian Con, I love that what Cathalion, Professor Broman, and everyone involved, what they've grown that event into. I mean, IGN did their Destiny podcast there. You know, brothers over at Guardian Radio, they had a panel over there, did their podcast live there. Obviously, you know, DCP guys, you know, Pope Bear and all them, they do their stuff there as well. But the point is, all the top people from the Destiny community are there. Bungie was there in full effect this year. They had the Gambit mode on PC there. They had a big tournament there. I know Miss 5000 Watts and a few other people that group, they actually won the tournament. So congrats to them. And it's awesome, man. It's awesome. I tell you this, though, just going into the game as an example, a lot of people were talking about that Gambit mode on PC and just how much they were loving it. And it's funny, I'm at a crossroads right now with Destiny 2, what I'm going to do for Forsaken. As much as I've built up, you know, part of, you know, G1 clan and all that, I have so many people I play with on PlayStation 4. I want to play on PC. I just do. I want to play it on PC. I mean, PC is the superior version. Playing in 4K 60 frames is what I want to do. But I feel like I'll be leaving so many people behind, because it's funny. I base it all on Trey. Right now, Trey acts like he doesn't want to play it anymore. So if he's not going to play anymore, what's keeping me on PlayStation 4? I don't know, but we'll see in September. Who knows?
Maybe get that. Maybe get that happy medium and play on PC with the controller.
You cut out. I didn't hear what you said.
As you say, just maybe get the happy medium and play on PC with the controller.
No. You're missing the point. It's not. That's not the issue. The issue is, do I stop playing with everyone I've been playing with for 4 years on PlayStation 4 that isn't on PC? That's the problem.
Gotcha.
And if Trey's going to keep playing, easy. I'll just stay on PlayStation 4. Because what I've learned, especially with playing other games, like I've been playing at Division and, you know, obviously great games like God of War and Spider-Man's coming out, Red Dead's coming out, Forza Horizon, there's all these great games that are coming out. There's no way in hell I'm going to be jumping back and forth between two platforms for Destiny 2. I'm just not. Just, like, I'm already at the point where I sure as hell don't feel like trying to level up six characters on two platforms. I'm not doing that at all. So I need to make a choice. You know, like I said, it's tough, man, because I really like playing it on PC. Right. But at the end of the day, the reason you play it is to play with your friends. And that's where they are on PlayStation 4. So we'll see.
Oh, well.
We will see in September. But moving on from that, there was a Digital Foundry video that came out. I saw it yesterday, Saturday. I'm not exactly sure when it came out, but Digital Foundry, you know, great. They always break down things, you know, on the tech side, gaming wise. They had a great video asking the question, should the next gen consoles focus on true 4K going into the next gen? And they basically gave their reasons why it shouldn't, because cost versus performance of what the technology is going to be. Basically, what they did was they took assets from E3, like from the PlayStation side, and was looking at what they were doing 4K wise, games that they suspected would be next gen titles, and then broke down, you know, hardware wise, what the PlayStation 5 would need to do. And obviously they speculated on what the next Xbox would be able to do as well. And I tend to agree with what they said. I think what we see right now with checkerboard rendering is fine. I dare you to go look at Horizon Zero Dawn or God of War or even the Spider-Man demo that was at E3 and tell me that, oh, that looks checkerboard. That's not true 4K. I don't want that. It's fine. But what checkerboard allowed you to do is it'll allow them to be able to hit 60 frames per second in the next gen. And in my opinion, that's more important than the marketing tool of true 4K. And the same goes for Xbox. Obviously, Xbox touted that with the Xbox One X because, yeah, it has the power under the hood to hit, quote unquote, true 4K this generation, but still, in most cases, 30 frames per second. I mean, the Forza games aside, most games are at 30 frames per second if they're hitting that, quote unquote, true 4K. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. If we're not doing 4K 60 frames per second as a standard in the next gen, what the hell? Why are we even putting out new hardware? Wait, because we're there right now. We're at 4K 30 right now. So why would we go spend $400 or $500 on new hardware for the next generation and spend another 6 or 7 years still doing 4K at 30 frames per second? Again, the frame rate at this point is more important than the resolution, in my opinion. So to me, whatever the hell they got to do to hit 60 frames per second, doing some tricks under the hood, do it. I'm perfectly fine with checkerboard rendering. PlayStation 4 Pro, has proven that with their exclusive titles this gen that it's fine. I don't look at any of those games and think, man, I really wish they could hit true 4K. And vice versa goes for Xbox One X. It's great that it can do true 4K, but I don't need it to do true 4K to elevate my gaming experience. So curious your thoughts on that.
Well, there was an article that's coming out in Edge magazine. It's this month's magazine. And there's a gentleman by the name of Timothy Lotz. He works for AMD. He's one of the developers. And he said that to achieve true 4K resolution on a title, you're going to need 7 to 8, 7.5 teraflops, which by default, neither the PS4 Pro or the Xbox One X can achieve. They're underpowered in that result. So that's when they start playing around in the back end and whether they're using, whatever other technical machinations to make to hit their 4K target. But I think at that point, they're still going to be doing 30 frames per second. So, and that undercuts the whole 60 frame minimum target line that I think you've been touting for what you want to see on the next generation.
Well, don't say what I want to see. What do you want to see?
I want to see, obviously, I'm going to say 4K 60 because that is the premiere. That's the target for most high-performing or ultra-performing PCs right now for video games. In general, though, and I think it's pretty safe to say 30 frames per second is kind of the, okay, we'll accept for most people because getting to that 60 frames per second is a much more costlier experience. Right. So, I mean, hell, even with my 1080 Ti and yes, I'm limited by having 2K monitors. I can barely hit 60 on some games. Like, I mean, on Islands of Nine, I was getting, 70 to 80 last night consistently while streaming and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's something that really makes that big of a difference for most people. And I apologize if it sounds like I'm kind of putting on my Danny hat here, but if you're on PC, 4K 60 is not something you're going to be achieving until you hit that $2,000 investment mark, specifically because half of that is probably going to be going to your video card. Whereas either 1440 60 or 2K or 4K 30 is probably the more common bar to hit whether you're on a budget or moderately priced PC or one of these higher end consoles like the PS4 Pro or the Xbox 3 or Xbox One X. But I will say that at this point, and I'm going to, I don't think Mark Cherny can sit there and look at a game and tell you whether it's 4K 60 native or if it's, you know, 4K 60 checkerboard. If he can say he's doing that, then he's on a much higher plane of intelligence than any human on earth. And I've lost Paris.
No, you didn't lose me. I was waiting for you to continue from what you were saying.
No. I hit the pause.
No, I mean, he might be. He might be. I mean, again, like I said at the top, it's, to me, if we're going into the next gen, which is starting to look like it's going to be 2020 now, so in 2 years, if we're going into this next gen of console hardware, and obviously it's going to be heavily AMD skewed, we already know that for both of them, to me, that's the template. And like I said, I would rather them introduce checkerboard rendering to hit 4K, which would then allow them to do 60 frames and keep the cost at a reasonable price, mm-hmm, versus feeling to hit that marketing checkbox of, well, it does native 2160p and da 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 da, but we can't quite get it to 60 frames. That's the problem. I don't want to see that. I want that next Halo game to come out, be it native or checkerboard, to be in 4K and to just do 60 frames on both multiplayer and single player. I want Destiny 3, as an example, to be 60 frames per second on the console. You know, I want every game that comes out next gen to be at 60 frames. It just should be. Now, if they want to have an art, quote unquote, artistic cinematic choice and go with 30 frames per second on a game, that's fine. But then that's very easy. Like The Last of Us is a great example of that on the PlayStation 4, the remastered version. Mm-hmm. You can go 60 frames if you want, but I find it plays better at 30, but you have the choice. It's up to you what you want to play it at. And that's all I'm saying going into next gen. Give us that choice. And there will be games that you absolutely will want at 60 frames per second. And there will be some games that will be perfectly fine at 30. Like, as an example, Cyberpunk. Do you need it at 60? Not necessarily. It probably would have a more cinematic feel at 30. But I want the choice. Because guess what? When I play Cyberpunk 2077 on a PC, it's probably going to be at 60 frames per second because I have the horsepower to be able to do it. So that's all I'm saying for these next-gen consoles. I see no point to advance beyond where we are right now unless we are taking it to that next level. And the next level is going to be the quote unquote magic 60 frames per second. So I think that's where we are.
Do we think that because HDR is the big talking point for a lot of hardware developers, do you think if maybe trying to hit that HDR point is limiting them from the FPS point? You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're putting focus on HDR so that it looks better, you know, the colors are deeper, et cetera. And as a result, they're getting a degradation on performance from FPS.
I don't really see it on the PC side though. I don't really see a performance hit. Again, I'll just take Destiny 2 as an example on a PC. It can do HDR. Hmm. When I look at my FPS counter, maybe a frame, maybe. It's really not taking that big of a hit doing that. So I don't think that's an issue, them targeting HDR. I don't think that's the bottleneck doing that. I think it's just another added feature. And obviously doing HDR10 is a lot more power friendly than what Dolby right. Vision is. And that's basically where all gaming is going, is HDR10. So I don't think it's an issue personally, but again, I honestly, not my problem. You know, if you're going to try and make me, I'm serious. If you're going to make me spend $400, $500 on another piece of hardware, then to me, that is the expectation. Or why are we even doing it? And I'm sounding like a broken record because that's going to be my answer every time. Why are we doing it unless you're hitting these minimum specs in my head?
Fair enough. Well, speaking of PC, Monster World Hunter finally coming to PC. But Monster World Hunter finally coming to PC on August 9th. Do you have any excitement for that at all?
Yeah, because I purposely, like I even said back in January, I was like, I'm going to wait on the PC version. Because I knew that if I wanted to invest in it, I would rather just invest on the PC side and not play it on PS4 or Xbox. So, yeah, I'm very excited for it. I love looking at what the PC requirements for. Again, we're talking that magic 4K 60. I should be able to hit it on my rig. I shouldn't have a problem with that. And for me, it's just going to be a brand new game since I never played it on the console. Cool. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, I'm on the fence. I don't know how important for me Monster World Hunter is going to be. I know I said early on that I was going to wait until it came out on PC, but it seems like a title that is it might become more difficult for me from a PC perspective. I don't know. It just doesn't seem, especially after playing, and maybe I was playing because I was playing the older version, the Wii version, or not the Wii version, the Switch version. At E3, that maybe it kind of turned me off, but I think it's something that I'm going to have to experience from many people, you know, playing with more people, right? Like, hopefully, and I'm going to gauge my ability, my desire to jump in on how many people are actually going to pick it up on PC that I can play with. I think I know my son's going to want to play it. So that might be one of those, you know, like your Destiny title with Trey. Right, that opportunity for me, and because I know he asked me if there's any games that are coming out that him and I could play on a co-op, you know, experience perspective. Maybe Monster Hunter World will be that one, or Monster World Hunter. Maybe that one will be that title that allows me to play with him. But I've seen from a bunch of people where that's not a type of that's a grind that people do not want to repeat. And I'm afraid that there's people that I would potentially play with because now it's jumping on PC that don't want to jump back into that grind. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's kind of why I held off not playing it, because then I'm gonna like, God damn, I don't want to do the grind all over again. Oh, might as well just stick with PlayStation version and not do that all again. It kind of goes back to what I was just talking about with Destiny 2 between mm-hmm. the PC and the console. It's like, I don't necessarily want to keep doing that grind. I don't want to do the grind twice.
Yeah.
You know, because I've already experienced it, you know, already playing Destiny 2 on both platforms. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh God, I just don't feel like doing it all over again. I'd rather just play the end game stuff. I just want that magic pill to just, again, this brings it way back. Mm-hmm. This is why cross-platform saves is, I want that more than I want cross-play, because then that just allows me to take my progress, whatever platform I go, and you don't have this issue. And the publisher still wins because I'm buying a copy twice. So I don't see why that is an issue to be able to enable that. So unfortunately, it doesn't sound like Monster Hunter is going to do that for anyone that's already been playing it on console. But hopefully by the time we get to the quote unquote next gen consoles, we're going to start seeing cross save be more of a reality.
Yep, I think so. I think so. And which
is another game, because I know I wasn't on last week, you know, Warframe. Obviously, that's something that's been talked about a lot recently, you know, with the big event that they just did, and just talking about all the new stuff that's coming in that game. And it is, quote unquote, the best free to play game outside of Fortnite in the world right now. Everyone has nothing but positive things to say about it. And, you know, the Switch version is coming out, but they're not going to have any kind of cross save functionality for that either, which is unfortunate, because if they did, I probably, and I actually have it downloaded, I just haven't started playing yet. That would be an option for me to start playing on PC. And then when I'm on the go, I could just continue on my Switch. I think that would be such an awesome thing. And I want to see that stuff start happening. I really do. So hopefully, again, we get more pressure from some of these publishers and developers so that, you know, PlayStation, Xbox, obviously Nintendo, you know, they enable this across the board, because tech wise, we know it can happen. It's not that hard of a thing for these developers to be able to enable. It's politics. It's money that's stopping it. So whatever. I don't want to go back down that road again, so I'll stop there.
No, it's fine. I mean, and I said it last week, Warframe. I mean, I logged into my account this week to claim that loot on Twitch Prime, because, you know, Twitch Prime, it's the whole month of Twitch Prime stuff. And so there's free loot that I think you get a ship in Warframe for free. So if you've got Twitch Prime, aside from dropping the subscription on the show, if you have it, but you know, every day there, whether it's a game, I think they're giving away Tacoma the other day. So if you've got, you know, Twitch Prime and jump in, you can claim that as one of your free games. I logged into my Warframe account. It told me, I last logged in like 5 years ago. And I was like, wow, has it been 5 years that I've played since I've played Warframe? And I mean, like I said last week, you know, our good friend DJ Knight, he plays it, you know, almost religiously, and it's a lot of fun. So I just don't know how well that'll translate over to the Switch. Obviously, people want to see that simply because of the portability factor. I know that there's concerns that because it's multiplayer, how well is that going to translate playing it on Switch versus being able to play it on PC or console and stuff like that. But I can definitely see it. Again, my concern is you trying to play it multiplayer on your Switch. If you're playing it remotely, it might be a little different as opposed to you playing it at home. But I mean, it's a good stuff. It's a good solid game. And if you look at the numbers, it's been consistently in that top 10 on Steam over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. So it's not like, oh, now it's becoming popular because it's coming to Switch. No, it's been on that list of good games consistently, and they've done nothing but develop and just continue to iterate on the title. So it's a great opportunity. If it's a great title to pick up, not just because it's fresh on the minds of people because of the Switch announcement, it's a solid title to play, period, and it's free to play.
Yeah, agreed. And I need to start playing it. Like I said, I was holding out to see if there was going to be that hope of cross save between the PC version and the Switch, but there isn't. So, I mean, I'll probably just start playing it on PC. It really all just comes down to time with all this stuff. It's like I want to try these new games, and then I'm trying to keep up on some of the other ones I'm still playing. And then we know a boatload of other games are about to come out here, you know, in the next couple of months. So it's just need more time today. I just need to quit my job and someone just finance me to just sit around and play games all day. Amazing. But moving on from that. So, you know, Danny talked about this last week. We've talked about it on social media. Right now we have this unique opportunity for our community, and it's with Moot, not mute, Moot, M-O-O-T. And I want to drive everyone to go to moot.us and search for Gamertag Radio, and you will find a discussion thread there for us where you can leave us questions. And if you leave us a question there and we read your question on the podcast, you will win a $50 Amazon gift card. And for this week, we picked one winner, and I don't want to butcher his last name, so I'm just going to say Kevin P., and we will be in contact with you on the back end so we can get you your $50 Amazon gift card. But Kevin asks us this. He says, hey, GTR crew, Nintendo Switch Online is set to launch in the upcoming months. Aside from the online service, what other improvements would you like to see from Nintendo? And for me, it is very, very simple. Partner with Discord, get the app on the Switch, and have real voice chat. That's it. That's all I want from Nintendo beyond what they already have. You know, it is turning into an amazing platform that we're you know, look, for better or for worse, we're seeing some amazing ports come from Bethesda. And obviously we have the one coming from Warframe right now. Obviously the first party lineup for Nintendo is obviously one of the best in the industry. It always has been. So no issues there. We have some great indie support right now. I just want to see when that online service drops, have Discord or whatever you need to do, and just make the voice chat simple. That's all I care about. If they can do that and truly have an online service that is easy to use across the board, Nintendo just keep printing money. They win. What about you, Pete?
I think I'm going to piggyback on yours aside from having...
No, you can't do that.
I can do whatever the hell I want. aside from having the online chat, I want to see Bluetooth compatibility. So I'm not tethered by a physical wire. I think in this world, hell, the Switch itself is wireless. You know, it's a mobile platform. Why do I need to be tethered by a piece of cable? I know there's adapters that you could plug in, and I think they're announcing those now. I'd like it to have native Bluetooth compatibility just to be able to fully make it wireless and free from cables.
Yeah. I mean, that would be awesome. Again, see, here's the funny thing with Nintendo. I still feel like the Switch is not a finished product. you know, as far as great and amazing as a platform as it is, which, hey, I will fully admit, I did not believe in at the beginning. I did not. That's why I held off on buying one, because I'm like, I don't know if Nintendo's going to get this right. But they have the gaming support. Now they just got to nail, kind of like you're saying, the accessory support and the online. Once they get that truly nailed down, I mean, Switch can do no wrong. And the irony, I think, Pete, is once they get all that nailed down, they're going to come out with not necessarily the Nintendo Switch 2, but they're going to come out with a revision of the current Switch. It's probably going to have a better battery. They're probably going to refine the controls on it a little more. They're going to tweak them, I think. And I can really see that happening as soon as a year from now. I really think that could happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, granted, they're just now readily available in market. But I wouldn't be surprised if, let's say, 2019, the summer, like maybe E3, they talk about version 2. Yeah. And then for next holiday season, it starts the whole you won't be able to find a Switch season. Question, though, are you going to do the same thing you did with the Xbox 360 where you sold it early so that way you could pick it up and have and be like – quote unquote, first in line for version 2.
No, I think in this scenario, if they were to put out a revision of the Switch with a better battery, I would take my current Switch and I would just officially pass it down to my kids. And then I would get the better battery version for myself. To me, that's just the only knock that I have on the Switch is like Danny. I keep meaning to ask Danny about that. The thing that he reviewed, that case that serves as a bat. Yeah. Because I kind of think I want to get it as well. Because, you know, when you're traveling and everything, I just think it would make it a lot easier to be able to use. Because even if you have a USB-C cord and say you're on a plane, you just plug it in natively, it doesn't really charge it that well. It wants those battery packs. So, and they need to be specialized battery packs. You can't just go get any one you want. So that would be my only thing. Just make the rechargeability, if that is a word, of the Switch more convenient and last a little longer.
And give me Netflix finally so I don't have to carry multiple devices.
Well, I'm actually glad you brought that up. So I talk about this a little bit on social media and, you know, obviously with you guys behind the scenes. I lost my iPad and I'm pretty sure I left it on the plane when I left Tampa. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Because I vividly remember having my iPad on the plane, and I remember it was the Cavs and the Pacers that was on while the flight, because I flew direct from Tampa to LA, and I wound up watching that whole game on the plane. And I guarantee you, I stuck my iPad in the thing in front, and then I just got off the plane and left it there. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. So I'm pretty sure I left it on the plane at LAX. But, yeah, so I lost my iPad, so I don't have that anymore. And the irony is, I didn't even realize I lost it for, what, 3-4 weeks, however long that was, because I don't use my iPad that much these days because, you know, I'm either just on my phone or, like I said, the Switch or something like that. But the whole point I'm trying to make of this is I'm debating getting a new iPad when the new ones launch in September. But one thing that would deter me from even doing that is if Netflix was on the Switch and I could download the movies like I do on my iPad from when I travel. That would seal the deal for me. I would just roll with the Switch to be my travel companion to watch movies and stuff if they were to do that. So, but if they don't, then I'm going to buy a new iPad.
Yeah, I can't see, that would be my only concern, is being able to do the download. I could almost see Nintendo saying, you know, we'll put it, but we'll only give you the streaming option, right? Simply because you would need extendable storage for it to be able to do that. And I just don't know if that's – I just don't know how much, you know, like a company like Netflix would have the ability to learn the API or the hardware to say, okay, let's put in extendable storage, you know, put in like a – does it support a 1 terabyte? SD chip? I mean, how are there even 1 terabyte micro SD cards at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I have a 256 in mine right now.
And I know the Netflix movies don't take too much storage, because I know, like,
no, they don't.
When they download, I know they're still compressed. So even if you're watching them, you know, they're still not, you know, I think they're maybe at 480 or something on iPads and stuff like that. So I don't know. I think if they can utilize those SD cards, I think it would work better. I just don't know how well the gameplay you know, coming off of those cards, is the IO going to be? And I know now we're starting to get into technical jargon talk, and I know Danny's probably already fallen asleep while editing this. But I'm just curious if it can read off of those micro SD cards at a fast enough clip to be able to support a playback function, because I think the built-in memory or hard drive space of those switches is not enough to maybe support maybe one movie. You know, and that would be my concern, is it going to be enough?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, probably it's just going to support streaming and not have the download function, which, again, unfortunate, because like I said, that would be the deal sealer for me. So before I forget and we move on, I just want to remind everyone what started this whole Nintendo topic is Kevin over at moot.us. You search for Gamertag Radio on there, found our discussion page, and he left us a question about the Nintendo Switch, and he just won a $50 Amazon gift card. We will be in contact with you, Kevin, to get you that $50 gift card from Amazon. So moving forward, if you're listening to this and you want to enter, instead of leaving us our traditional fan mail over at Discord or sending us an email, leave us a question or a comment over at moot.us and search for Gamertag Radio, and you too can have the opportunity to win a $50 Amazon gift card. Not mute, moot, M-O-O-T. All right, so move forward from that. One last thing that you had on here, Pete, I didn't know how much you wanted to get in this. You brought up mental health and video games is now an official medical disorder. Mm-hmm. I think I briefly saw something about this, but I didn't deep dive into it. So if you want to elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a conversation that I think in general we as gamers have to have. As a child, I played a lot of video games, and you know, my parents were always like, you know, get off of the stupid box. You know, you have a lot of things, you have things better to do. Seeing the way, whether it's myself or my kids, have an ability to make a decision, and then having video games that make, you know, whether you're doing mindless, you know, fun in Battle Royale, or you're playing like The Last of Us, and where you're playing a game that makes you, you know, think, or you're doing games like Portal or whatever. I think video games has jumped to the point that it can be something useful. Like anything else, I think addiction can always be a bad thing, right? I know anything that you enjoy as a person can be abused and taken to the point where it starts to affect you from a, you know, professional level or a personal level. But video games can do some good as well. And aside from things like Guardian Con and Extra Life, where people are able to play games and do something, you know, I mean, hell, look at Ninja. He got like a $100,000 donation to support Guardian Con just this past week. You know, so it's proof positive that gaming can do good. But playing video games as well helps your cognitive ability. It helps with your Twitch, you know, reaction. It helps decision making. So there's other good things. And again, taken to the extremes, it can be a bad thing. I mean, I don't know. I just think that it might have been too quick to say that it's a medical condition. I don't know how much research and thought went into that decision. I think it can be used as a support tool for people when they're having, you know, when they're having a bad day. You can, you know, it gives you the opportunity to jump into like a virtual world when you're getting hit with anxiety or depression. And I don't know if people that are outside of video games see that as the right tool to help that. You know what I mean? I think people just see video games as, oh, it's just you're wasting time, right? And I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I think people who are not I guess video game adjacent should see the positives and not just instantly see it for the negative that people typically kind of tape video games with, right? There's a positive for most things. And I think if people did that, you know, I think video games would get a better light. And I don't know if I just don't, I, again, it can be taken to the extreme, but I think there's always there's a good in it, and I think it shouldn't get that bad taste.
No, I agree. And just in life in general, there's always going to be a positive and negative to everything. Again, like you said, if you take it to either side of the extreme, you're going to see the good in it. Like we just brought up everything that's going on with Guardian Con right now and just all the money they raise. And then you could take it to the opposite extreme of all of the just the toxic nature that we see in some of these online gaming communities. And, you know, both of us are around the same age. And, you know, I remember back in the 80s, Atari 2600, my mom yelling at me, "You're sitting too close to the damn TV. Them games will rot your brain." So maybe it did. Maybe I'd be smarter than I am right now. And, you know, maybe I'd be Elon Musk. I don't know. Maybe video games ruined me. I don't know. But jokes aside, I mean, I think, yeah, it has a positive benefit in all the things that you said. It improves your motor skills in that way. And look, there's an argument for both. So I'm not sitting here trying to just sing the praises of gaming. Obviously, it's a gaming podcast. But I don't think it's the boogeyman that it is being depicted by some people is what I'm trying to say. I don't think it's a good or bad thing. I just think it is a thing. If anything, what gaming has done, you know, in the past decade, it's brought a lot of people together that otherwise would have never met. Again, I'll just go back to the Guardian Con thing again. You know, so many people from all around the world converged on Tampa because of a game. And it is now, they're all not there just for the game. They're there for the people. I'm not even saying it right, but you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
It's not just about playing the game. It's about the social aspect of it that brings people together is the point I'm trying to make. So, like I said, I see the good. I see the bad in it. I think there is more good than bad for sure. But I'm not the person to make that call on that. That's just one man's opinion.
Right.
So I think that's it for all the topics that we had this week, unless there was anything else you wanted to bring up.
I just wanted to give a big shout out to the folks at Rainbow Six. They started doing auto ban. Yeah, the automatic ban when people start using racial slurs in the text chat in the game. I think it's the first time you do it, it's a 30-minute first offense ban. Second and third, it's 2 hours. And then anything after that, your account is open to investigation with a potential permanent ban. Shout out to the folks at Rainbow Six for being the ones that step out and say, no, it's not the good and the right thing to do. It's, you know, you're a bad person when you do these. And don't get salty when your account gets banned because you know what you're doing.
Well, it's funny. I went down the rabbit hole of that dude's Twitter yesterday because I was just curious. And he's a foreigner. I'm not exactly sure what country he's from. So a lot of it was in a different language. But just seeing him rationalize why he said it, oh, it's a friend of mine. It was a joke. Doesn't make it better. Doesn't mean that Rainbow Six shouldn't have banned you for saying it. Doesn't mean that Rainbow Six, you know, Twitter account shouldn't have told you good. Glad you got banned because you should have. And that's the thing. We have to get away from that stupid freaking word. We really do. And I'm saying this as an African-American who's heard that word damn near every day of my life, both in a positive and in a negative aspect, you know, because in my culture, it has been used as a word. I'm not talking right today and I apologize.
Term of endearment. Almost.
There you go. Thank you. Doesn't make it better. I don't say it around my kids. I don't use that word unless I basically have no choice. And then, yeah, it comes up in music and stuff like that. But we're getting to the point where not only that word, but just other words that are used towards other races and sexualities that are used in a negative light, got to get away from them. Because with social media right now, with the way that it works and the way online gaming, all that works, people get to hide behind their avatar and they say these mean things and they do these crazy things to basically try and hurt the other person, to try and like I said, he wasn't even talking to a black person. He wasn't even talking to an African-American. He was saying it to another person because in his head, that was the meanest thing he could possibly say. And that's the problem. It's not even just being a racist thing. It's just being a bad human thing. if that makes sense. Like, how can I hurt you? That's the thought process that goes into that. How can I be mean enough to you to say something that is going to hurt your feelings? And unfortunately, that word, along with some others, are used in that context. And we just, as a society, we just got to get away from it. Look, I don't know nothing. These are just my thoughts, just what I'm thinking. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, unfortunately, they're all here to stay and I just need to deal with it. Hell, I've been dealing with it for 44 years, so I guess it's no surprise. But this is my thought. I just think I'm glad that Rainbow Six did that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that they have the band going for it, and I hope others do the same thing.
Agree. 100% agree. 100% agree. Couldn't say it.
Let me say this. Because let me tell you this to all of my non-African American friends right now. So it's very clear. If you ever approach me and think, well, I'm good friends with Paris and it's okay, saying the N-word around me is very uncomfortable for me. Because when you say it, am I supposed to respond to you in an angry way? Am I supposed to just let it go? Am I supposed to point out, hey, man, can you not say that around me? It puts me in an awkward situation. So don't do it. Don't do it. Don't be that guy that thinks, well, Paris and I are good friends. I can say it around him because we're friends. No, you can't. Don't say it around me. Don't say it around me. Don't say it around my friends. And the point being is because you don't know how the person you're saying it to is going to react. You're not. And you're not going to know. I'm going to take a step further. Here we go. Danny here. I say what the hell I want. So my daughter, she's 16. She goes to local church, the youth group. You know, she goes twice a week. You know, it's a great thing. So one night, this is a few weeks ago. One night I go pick her up. And usually I get there early and I'll just sit in my car with the windows down. So I knew she was going to be running late because she'd already texted and told me. So the other kids are sitting outside and they're playing some game. And then one of the quote unquote youth leaders, who is Latino, he's Mexican, is saying, now it's him and a bunch of white kids mostly, right? He's sitting there saying that he was like, all right, all the brown kids to the back, all the brown kids to the back. He goes, know your race, know your place. And it was like a record scratch for me. I was like, wait, what? And he's saying this out in an open parking lot, right? You don't know who the hell's hearing you. Obviously, I'm one of these people he didn't know was there. I heard him. So I literally got out of my car and I was like, wait, what did you say? And I was like, and he said it again. And I'm like, no, you don't say that. That's not cool. Don't say that. My daughter goes here and I don't want her exposed to stuff like that. And then he proceeded to justify that it was okay that he could say it because he was Mexican. So it's okay that he can say that brown kids go to the back, know your place, know your race. Sorry, you got a whole group of impressionable, you know, teenage white kids that are hearing what you're saying and they may think that's okay. And then they go somewhere else and say it. Or you have other people around you that are hearing this that think, well, what the hell is he saying? Why is he saying this? They don't know that it's a quote unquote joke that it's okay to say. And then my daughter came out and I'm explaining to her and I was very adamant that no, it is not okay that you say that. You will not say this kind of things with my daughter present. And if this is the way that this youth group is going to be operated, then my daughter's simply not going to go here anymore. Because like I told her when we left, you don't let people talk to you that way. That is not okay. If someone says something like that to you, check them immediately, because it ain't about the color of your skin. There is no put in your place or any of that stuff. And I don't give a damn if you're Mexican, Chinese, black, doesn't matter. You don't talk like that. It's not okay to put down your own race because you are that race. I refuse to let something like that happen, you know, especially for my kids. So I think that's the point that I'm trying to make here. Just because you're a certain race or whatever doesn't make it okay for you to say racial comments or negative things about another race, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we need to get over the skin color nonsense and culture and, you know, creed and all these things. We're all one people, especially in today's age with the internet. We're all connected worldwide and we got to get over this stuff. And like I said, I got to practice what I preach, and that's why I try very hard myself, even in private moments, to not use that word at all, because it's wrong. It just is. So there you go. I'm done off the pulpit. I'll shut up. That's all I got to say.
I ain't following up nothing on that one, dude. Like, I'm dumbfounded that a church group or any kind of child, any kind of, you know, student services group, whether it's, you know, an aftercare or something. Where and in what level does that ever become okay? You know your race, know your place. Like, be thankful that you have a lot more restraint, because I don't know if I would have had the same restraint you had.
Well, I'm not going to sit there. And that's what I mean. I wasn't. Oh, and then I was being told that I was being hostile, because I was like, no, I'm not. Because I wasn't cursing. I wasn't doing anything. I was like, no, you knock that off. I go, you do not talk at that. And this kid was, I don't know, he was probably high teens, late 20s or early 20s, something like that. And I'm like, no, it's not okay that you're Mexican, that you get to say that. Why would you say that about yourself? That was the whole point. It was like, you don't talk like that. And I'm not going to have my kid, who is, you know, she's biracial, but if you look at her, you think she's African-American. She's not going to hear that. I'm not going to let you talk to her like that. You know your place, know your race. It's freaking ridiculous. So again, I'm sitting here getting heated, thinking about it all over again. But the point is, we got to get past all that stuff, man. We really do. And like you're saying, as an adult, I have to have the restraint to not set the example by yelling and screaming or cursing at a bunch of kids. The point was, I was very stern, absolutely. And yeah. I know I have a very deep, you know, dominating voice, but I was making my point. And it's funny, since then, whenever I go up to the youth group, they're all very nice to me. All right. Well, I think we'll go ahead and end it here. So, Danny, remind everyone again where they can leave us feedback.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, Pete, any last words before we get out of here?
No, that's it, man. I think we had a great show. Considering we dropped topics like 20 minutes before the show, I think we had a phenomenal discussion.
Well, that's
on a
lot the of thing. It's the summer. There's nothing going on. That's the problem. It's like, you know, we're grasping at straws for stuff until some of these games and these events start happening. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I think it was good topics. And yeah, a lot of fun. Great show. So again, I want to thank everyone that hung out with us here in Twitch Live. I want to thank everyone that's been listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we're not doing any of this without you guys. And one final reminder, if you want to leave us a comment and have a chance at that $50 Amazon gift card, it is moot.us and search for Gamertag Radio. Find that discussion thread and leave us a question there for your chance to win. So with all that said, this has been episode 777 of Gamertag Radio. I'm Paris. That's Pete. We'll see you guys soon.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.